Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on Vox Pop, we garden once again. Last week was such a smashing success. So many callers left on the line. We're doing it again. And today we welcome Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery. They're here to answer your questions. The number is 800-348-2551. So stop pulling weeds and give us a call. That's what she wrote. Stop pulling weeds. 800-348-2551 is our number. You can email us your gardening question as well. It's voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Well, you heard the script. Stop pulling the weeds. Give us a call, and we'll be back after the news. Hello again, lockdown chums. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Bob Graves is a co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. And we welcome your gardening calls. Always a popular show when the gardeners are back. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number, it's a call-in show. 800-348-2551. Greg Ward, Bob Graves, welcome.
Hey, wow. It's good to be back.
Thanks for having us. Now, hey, how are you?
We're hanging in there. Greg, how are you?
Yes, we're doing okay. We are open, social distancing, lots of mask wearing, gloves, cleaning, lots of things. But we are open, and people are gardening.
You know, that was a question that came up last week. Greg, you were off last week because we really only can do two phone guests during Vox Pop. Otherwise, it screws up the caller lines. Bob was here, and somebody actually was on hold at the end of the show and said, but hey, do they do curbside pickup at Fatigan's?
Yes. We're doing online orders for delivery. We're doing curbside pickup, which is online also. And we are open to come in the store by appointment so that we're limiting the number of people that are here at one time in order to be able to maintain distancing. But we're doing the same, cleaning and signs and all that.
Well, I'm glad you guys are both open, and I'm glad you could spare an hour for us today. The number is 800-348-2551. This email came in right before showtime, and this is from James. Subject heading, weeds and pruning. What is the crabgrass that is like a spider plant and sends thick roots out underground long distances to find space to send up a spider plant-like growth?
Quackgrass, right?
Probably. You know, what we tell people this time of year is if they've got something growing that they think is crabgrass, it's not. Oh. Crabgrass dies over the winter, and it comes back with seed. And it hasn't come back yet. So if it's there now, it's not crabgrass.
Yeah, that quackgrass is a generic name. I'm not sure of the real genus species, but that does exactly what that guy described. It sort of runs along. If it's in your lawn, though, it doesn't usually survive the mower for very long.
Quackgrass, you said?
Quack, like a duck.
Oh, I'll be darned.
There's a bunch of forage grasses, you know, things that would normally grow in a field that can get into a lawn. And if it's persistent, like Greg says, a lot of them can't take mowing, but if it's persistent, there's no selective way to get rid of it.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I have them all. All the different varieties are in my lawn. This is the second part of the email from James. How and when is a good time to prune young fruit trees and Rose of Sharon?
Oh, that's fun. Which one do you want, Bob?
Well, fruit trees are generally done a little earlier than this. You know, my rule of thumb on any deciduous tree is to prune it when it's not in a period of most active growth, which is about right now. So now's not the time. So before it's in active growth, which could be February or March typically, you could do them in the summer, but you don't really want to trim fruit in the summer because then you're taking fruit off.
Right.
Or you could do it later in the fall after the fruit is gone.
Yeah. So Rosa Sharon is not too active yet. They're kind of slow to wake up, and they flower on new wood, which means all the new growth that happens this summer produces the flower bud. So pruning them back now or in the next couple of weeks is ideal.
Okay. One more email, and then we'll jump to the phones. This one's from Amy in New Paltz. Amy writes, I have a beautiful stand of tiger lilies that have become quite prolific and are spreading beautifully around my property. Last week, I noticed the return of the pesky, pretty pesky, red lily beetle earlier than I've ever noticed them. What's the best way to rid my lovely lilies of the lily beetle? And that's from Amy in New Paltz.
Well, picking them, right? You can definitely just harvest those beautiful red adults and then the larvae, which are kind of slug-like and have a brown slime on them, which is not as much fun. That thing, it's an organic insecticide called Captain Jack's, which is a sort of a fungus soup kind of thing that will kill both the larvae and the adults. So you could apply that, but you would have to do it regularly.
Okay.
Captain Some people Jack. Recommend neem oil, N-E-E-M, neem oil for that too. I found it doesn't work all that well, but an awful lot of sites recommend it.
Okay. Captain Jack. That's a rum, right?
It's a brand. The brand of a product that has an active ingredient that, don't ask me to spell it, but I can pronounce it, spinosad.
Ah, yes.
And it actually comes, they discovered it in rum distilleries.
No,
in the Caribbean.
Not really, right?
Or yeah.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Oh, you cut it out. All right, so let's go to the phones. I'm getting confused. 800-348-2551. Bob Graves is here from Fadigan's. Greg Ward is here from Ward's Nursery. And Joe in Canaan, Connecticut. Joe, you're first.
Yeah, hi. Always enjoy your shows.
Thank you.
I have a what was initially planted as a screen of white pine trees that have grown out of control. And so I've had to trim out the lower branches. What I'd like to do is, maybe you can give me some suggestions to grow something that will grow underneath the pine trees, which will be pretty much shaded. And, you know, the soil has been affected, I'm sure, by the pine needles over the years. I'm looking for something maybe 2 or 3 feet high and possibly a ground cover. Now, I do have hostas that I could transplant. I have myrtle and what's the other ground cover I have? Well, in any case, because you can make some, you know, I'm looking for something maybe 2 or 3 feet high that will grow in that type of situation. That'll give me a bit of a screen. I'm on a road cut on a very busy road, and if I can, you know, just get something that's, like I say, 2-3 feet high that'll grow underneath the pine trees. That'd be super.
Greg, you want to go first?
Oh, sure. So, is the area where you would be doing this planting? Is it fairly sunny? Is the sun shining there for a few hours a day?
Not really. Not during the summer.
Yeah.
Well, there are pine trees above it.
Right.
So I've had to trim out dead branches up about 6 feet.
Yeah, you'd want to plant completely under the pines, or would it be out? Could you get out into the open a little bit?
It'd be under.
Yeah.
I have daylilies, too, that I could transplant there. I don't know if daylilies, because those things would grow anywhere.
Yeah, and then you're talking about these ground covers, and so that's all you're concerned with is something that is herbaceous, like a hosta or a daylily, that would fill in at a couple of feet. You're not looking for two different levels, right? Just one level.
Well, both.
Okay.
Now, you know, like if I could put down the myrtle, you know, which is not, obviously you're not going to grow very high, but it's going to, you know, keep the weeds out and,
then
you know, it'll be pretty.
The daylilies?
What do you think, Greg?
I have daylilies.
Yes.
Go ahead, Bob.
Pekasander would be great. Daylilies, no. Myrtle, maybe, but Pekasander would be better, right?
I think Pekasander too.
I think what you have is going to, you know, work out pretty well. You know, I was just trying to think of some woody things to put in there, but nothing really came up.
You know, if it's really shady, there are very few options. You could consider rhododendron maximum, but it worries me that it's near a road and it may have salt issues. You could do viburnum prunifolium or one of the other. You know, you got maybe a handful of options for any kind of shrub that's going to grow in that dense shade. If you think about it, you go out right. in the woods, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Nothing. And there, maybe some hydrangeas, maybe.
The root system of the pines will be both taking up a lot of space and a lot of moisture from the ground. So they're going to be competing all the time without probably amending these areas. But another herbaceous thing was a goat's beard. Goat's beard can take some shade. They get several sizes, pretty easy to grow.
Hmm.
So sticking maybe with those herbaceous things, non-woody things might be your best bet.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a quick break here. Bob Graves is here. Greg Ward is here. It's The Gardening Show. The number is 800-348-2551, and we will be right back. T-Bone Walker here on Vox Pop. It's The Gardening Show today. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Bob Graves and Greg Ward are answering your questions today about gardening. And this email came in from Gene. Gene says, because I love the thick trunks of the old lilacs, I've been way too shy about pruning them, and they've gotten too tall, kind of a mess. Can you recommend a really good and artistic pruner for shrubs?
Where does she live?
Doesn't say.
Several pruners over here, but just taking out, what you have to do is take out one, if you've got three big heavy limbs or stems or maybe five, you take out a third of them and you let the smaller ones that are below that or younger than that fill in. And then in a year or two or three, you take out some more. And that's what you would do with a lilac no matter what, correct?
Yeah, it's not that hard. You're taking the oldest wood out to rejuvenate it so it pushes up new wood. Nothing terribly artistic about it. You just want to get some of that old wood out of there so it starts putting out new wood.
Well, I mean, you can be artistic. You've been to Disney, right, where they have the shrubbery that looks like Mickey Mouse and whatnot? It's very artistic.
Okay, Ray. Okay.
All right. You're in a bad mood today, Bob. I can see that being on twice in the space of a week is more than you can take, and I agree. this is from Claire. Claire's subject heading, raspberry bush pruning. Claire writes, I planted a raspberry bush a few years ago. I haven't really trimmed it back at all. Some branches have no leaves on it this year. Should I cut them off? Is this the right time of year, or should I have done it sooner? And that's from Claire.
Yeah. Want me to do that one?
I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
So every year, the oldest branches, the ones that, fruited last summer, are not going to be alive this spring. They have did their 2 years of time and they're done. So probably anything that's sort of dry and brittle should definitely come out. It's really a good idea to clean that dead wood out all the time. And pretty much that's it at this point. That's all you would have to do. You can also sometimes tip them just to shorten them and make them branch a little bit more, but it's not really critical.
Okay. Bob, you want to add anything there?
No, it's somewhat similar to the lilac question in that you got to take the old stuff out to get new stuff to come.
Yeah.
And you do. The tips on them will die off a lot of the time, and you just nip that back a little bit and take the old wood out every year if you can. Yep.
All right, this is from Sharon, and then we'll get back to the phone. Sharon in Newburgh writes, I'm planting a living hedge out of willow cuttings. Do I need to worry about how close they are to my house? I will not be over any of the service utility lines. I just wasn't sure about the distance from my house.
Depends on what kind of willow there is. If they're talking something like a weeping willow, boy, I wouldn't put it anywhere near a house.
No. Those variegated willows, the nishiki willows, big shrubby things.
If it's a shrub type, sure, that's not a problem. But don't put willow trees near a building.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go. Pat in Newburgh. Pat, you're on.
Hi. I hope you can help us. We have a problem that comes back every year. We call them cicadas, but we don't know what's under the ground. And what happens, a hole appears, a pile of sand is next to the hole, and then bees fly around the top of this hole, and I guess to protect it. And every year there are more of them and more of them, and I'm afraid they're going to take over the whole backyard. And we have tried everything that we found on the internet, garlic, smothering them.
You know, there are ground bees, and they're relatively nasty things, too. They can be aggressive.
Bees aren't.
They're not, you said, Pat?
They're not
aggressive.
We would probably have to poke them before they would. There's only maybe two at a time that fly around the top.
Hmm.
And there are wasps, you know, that do just a pair would live in the ground and come out. And so, and again, usually not that aggressive. I mean, they might be able to sting, but not that aggressive. I always attribute that kind of thing to the type of soil you have, that they prefer what you have right there. So it's probably easy to excavate for them, provides them with, you know, just the right depth for what they're doing, and they're probably laying their eggs in there. Probably some, you know, important pollinator to some native plant. So I wouldn't recommend doing them in if you could help it. If it's
they
the
are
lawn or
right
the
by our back door too.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I mean
there's a path, but right on the other side. So far, no one has been stung except one person on their pinky finger. But it isn't as if they want to attack you. They just want to keep you away from these holes, which each year we have less and less grass because the grass doesn't grow on those holes.
That's an issue, gentlemen.
You could try some other things there, a little garden with maybe some, if again, I'm correct and the soil's well-drained, you could try some plants that would tolerate a drier condition, some sedum, et cetera, and create a little garden there. It sounds actually kind of interesting, but I don't have any solution to removing them. I think they like what you have.
Okay. Pat, thanks a lot for the call. In my experience, and maybe these aren't the same bees, but the ground bees don't last too long. They're there, and then they're sort of gone after a few weeks or a month.
It's not all
usually,
right?
Yeah, usually.
Bob Graves is here. Greg Ward is here. It's the Gardening Show. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Magenta in Woodstock. You're on.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Last year, you guys helped me out with a situation. This is another lilac question. After flowering and towards the end of the summer, I have a deep pink and then a purple with one of those awful fake lilacs with the little white bracts in between. This is not my planting. I'm a renter. But at the end of the season, the two regular lilacs develop this awful yellow thing, and everything just went droop. And when I called, you said they're finished, just, you know, what have you. But I can't pull them out because, again, I'm a renter. They're about 10 feet tall, too. So here we are, spring, and the one that I most love, nearest to the house, the deep pink one, which has three or four sort of, I'd say, inch and a half diameter things coming out of the ground. The one that's closest to the house actually is leafing and has several nice flower bracts on it. And the rest of it looks dead except for some of the extreme branches on one other thing that have a few leaves on the end but no sign of anything else. Now, what I'm wanting to know is, should I now cut back or cut down or cut back the bare branches that are apparently dead, and or should I leave the ones that have some sign of life on the very tips of them? What would you recommend?
Well,
kind of the same answer, right? Anything that's dead is going to come out. Anything old can come out.
Now, too, even when there's some flowering going on, the flowers are about to come out.
You know, if there's growth on the ends, that's still alive. But if there's nothing on it, you can trim that out anytime.
Okay, and do I trim it the whole limb down to the ground, and that won't rot or anything in the I mean, with the warm weather and the rain and all that sort of thing, it won't create a problem for the rest that's alive?
No.
Sure.
No. Did you say there were some younger shoots coming from the ground as well?
Not really. No.
Okay.
They're
it's
about 10 feet tall, maybe 8, 10. There are 4 or 5, you know, several inch in diameter branches.
That's it.
But only one of them, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Only one of them is really, has.
So, like Bob said, taking out anything that's truly...
So far, there's no yellowing of the leaves or anything.
Truly dead. Any truly dead branches that crispy, they're not green under the bark. You can prune those out anytime. Anything with a flower still on it, I would definitely leave it. When those flowers are finished, pinch those seed heads off. So that'll be sometime in June. So you're removing any potential for them to spend a lot of time making the fruit. But actually, getting back to what that plant needs, it sounds like it might need just a little help with nutrition. And so if there's some lawn around that plant...
That's true, because it's in a very acid environment.
Removing any sod or grass or weeds from around the plant and adding a thin layer of mulch. And I would recommend fertilizing it right now, the sooner the better, to encourage it to create some new growth somewhere, either on those heavier limbs or possibly new shoots from the ground.
Magenta, did you say that it is in a very acidic environment?
Yes. I clear the pine needles away, but I'm in a white pine, clearing in a white pine forest. There's absolutely no way to keep it
You may want to test the soil, because sometimes you think it's acid and it's not. So if you get a soil test, what happens if the pH is off is the nutrition that you put on the soil becomes unavailable to the plant. So see if you can get a little soil test on that and see where you are, because it's not always what you think, even if there are pine trees there. And the other question we didn't ask is it in a lot of sun or is there some shade?
Well, we lost her, but she said it was, I believe, in shade.
If it's in shade, it's not going to do very well anyway for a lilac. They like to be in a lot of sun.
All right, let's go back to the lines at 800-348-2551. Thomas in Delmar, you're up.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have several peony bushes that do really well. They're all in the same area. They all get the same amount of sun. But two of them never bloom. I don't know if they're too deep or too shallow, but I was wondering if you could help me out with that, understanding what I need to do, and then what time of year I would need to do that.
So it too deep can keep them from blooming. Usually they'll form a small flower bud, and it just never matures. So if you a little bit kind of brown. So definitely checking them for too deep. This is not the ideal time. Late summer and fall would be the ideal time, but if you get to, if you get to June and you have no flowers, you could do it sooner if you really wanted to, don't you think?
Yeah. Again, it's ideal you do it later, but you got to raise them up sometime. Maybe you could do it early enough now. It's been cold, so.
You could actually just pull the soil away. Don't move them. Just simply create a little, pan or divot where they are. And that can actually make a difference possibly at this season.
But that sounds like that's the verdict, that they're too deep.
That too deep or too shady, those are the two things that would keep them from blooming.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Thomas, thank you very much. Greg Ward is here. Bob Graves is here. Bob Ward is a different guy who used to be on the radio station years ago, and not a combination of the both of you by any stretch. Bob Graves is here from Fattigan's Nursery. Greg Ward is here from Ward's Nursery. Oh, I think it's almost nappy time for Raymond. Lynn in Saratoga. Lynn, you're on.
Hi. I have a red maple tree that we planted about 7 years ago. A bald tree in a very rocky and sandy area that supports maples, birch, a lot of white pines. But the tree, even though it was big and healthy when we planted it, is not thriving. We suspect that it's not getting enough light because of the large trees around it. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions short of moving it, which is not a possibility.
When you say red maple, it's an Acer rubrum. It's a shade tree. It's a maple that turns red in the fall. Okay, so that's a big shade tree, right?
No.
Its leaves don't really turn red in the fall.
But it's not a Japanese maple.
No, it's not.
Okay, and it has green leaves, not red leaves.
Correct.
Okay. Well, if it's in a lot of shade, it's not going to do well. You can try fertilizing. The problem, often we get these questions: is something's in shade? If I fertilize it, is that going to help? Well, it's not going to hurt. But you have to understand that a plant is like a manufacturing operation. If there's raw materials and no energy, it doesn't work. So the sun is the source of the energy, and if you don't get that, anything else you do isn't going to make all that much difference. It isn't going to hurt. But if it's in a whole lot of shade,
yeah, I
shade
think if
tree,
we get it to just be a little taller, then it would be okay.
Well,
what kind of fertilizer would I try?
Also, you've had it a few years or 1 year? Or, I didn't
we
hear that.
We planted it about 7 years ago, and when we planted it, it was about I would say about 17 feet tall. It was a big tree to begin with.
So I was wondering, just curious about that root flare of the tree. Mm-hmm. Is that noticeable? In other words, is the tree possibly a little too deep?
I don't think so. My husband's a landscape architect, and I work for Urban Forestry. So
So if you see if the tree comes down and you see the
too deep.
Yep. If you see the root flare, is visible right now from the view from wherever, then it's not too deep.
Yes.
But that is something that can slow a large tree down. And when you plant a large tree, they do take some time to settle. But by 7 years, it certainly should have started to catch. I think I'm back with Bob, and fertilizing won't hurt. And then, although the spring's been wet, as we go into summer watering, if it's competing with a lot of other things, watering those trees can really make a big difference as well.
All right, Lynn, thank you so much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today, Bob Graves is here, Greg Ward is here, and Gina is in Rhinebeck. Gina.
Hey, guys. I finally made it to Ward's, and I bought some fabulous things. And now I need your help in talking me through this coming frost freeze business. I'm just sick about it, and I've got things planted all around. I've taken my indoor plants out. Those I can cover maybe with a blanket, but I've planted all perennials. How bad is this coming weekend?
So those outdoor plants would be the ones I'd worry about most. I mean, those indoor plants that you moved out, I would worry about. Anything you had in the house that you brought outside needs to harden off. And some of those may not like it below 40 degrees. So it's been, and it's still a little cool this spring,
right,
even without the days that are coming up this weekend. So those, I would actually consider bringing those back into the house for another week or so at least.
Okay,
keep them warm. The perennials, if you have perennials and you've planted them, I wouldn't really worry about any of them at all. It's really not going to be that cold for perennials. It's really the tender things. If you did consider putting in some annuals in a container, maybe some geraniums or a petunia, mm-hmm, or something, that's the kind of thing you have to worry about this go around.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
okay.
Gina. Our
Thank
guests
you.
Today on the program, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll be right back. The great Stefan Grappelli with David Grisman there on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Ray Graff with you. It's the Gardening Show. Second one in the space of a week. Who could be luckier than you? Bob Graves is here. Greg Ward is here. And a couple of emails here, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one is from Jonathan in East Chatham. And Jonathan writes, for the last 16 years, I have grown cilantro and dill, some years in the ground, some in pots, both from seeds and six packs. Every year they bolt within a couple of months. Is there a technique to make them prolific and not have them go to seed so early?
No.
Oh, right. Very easy.
You know, that's what they do. And so harvesting them immediately and cutting, you know, just keep trimming the tops as soon as they look ideal can definitely slow the whole thing down. But their, you know, their whole life cycle is to bolt and drop and flower and then drop a whole bunch of seed, and then that seed germinates and starts the process all over again. And if it happens a couple times in the summer, then the seed in the fall just waits and comes around in the spring. If he's been doing it for years, you know, especially in the garden area, he probably should get some repeats from his old seeds from the bolting plants.
Okay. This one's from Todd, and the subject heading, all caps, weeds. So Todd is not pleased. Todd writes, we have weed in our flower gardens that someone told us is called donkey tail. What is the best way to get rid of this weed? It seems to break off before the root if you're just trying to pull them up.
That sounds like equisetum, doesn't it? We call it horsetail.
Yeah. Horsetail?
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's brutal.
Really? Well, how do you get rid of it?
Well, baiting for
you know,
it.
Oh, good. Yeah, it never grows in the lawn because it can't stand being mowed. But pulling it does nothing. Mm. So the best bet is to go in there and cut it back continuously, like almost every week.
Yeah.
You can't go in that situation and use herbicides, and they don't work very well on it anyway. It's brutal to get rid of, but what it doesn't like is being constantly cut.
So this is the same philosophy one would take in trying to control Japanese knotweed.
Yes. Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Just chop that thing at the base after it leafs up a bit.
Keep cutting.
All right, this one is from David in Kingston. David writes, I'm a person familiar with gardening, but new to starting plants from seed, veggies, and flowers. After getting leggy plants and overall poor results, I learned that seed starting requires more than a sunny window and a grow light, heat pad, and air circulation setup is best. Should I wait until next year to do better, or are there examples of plants that benefit from indoor germination throughout the season?
You got some, Bob? Go ahead.
Well, you know, the hard part about starting seeds indoors is you're right. Even if you have a sunny window, sometimes it's not enough. And plants stretch, and people start them too early. You know, the answer is to start them just a few weeks before you're going to put them out, and the seed packet will tell you. And the other is supplemental light. If you're really going to grow seeds seriously indoors in this part of the world, you need some supplemental light because they're stretching for the light.
Okay.
Not too much else you can do.
Yeah. And there are some things he could continue to practice on, all of the short-term things, especially some herbs. You know, basil comes to mind.
Yeah.
We just talked about cilantro. These are things that you could start from seed, and they don't take long, and you could just kind of keep practicing. You know, and you could also start seeding some things outdoors soon, if not now. Some things can be seeded already, and that's good practice as well.
All right, this one is from somebody. Amy. I have a bay leaf tree in a pot. It's about 2 feet tall. When I moved it outside this spring, I noticed brown little bugs all over it, mostly clinging to the stems at the center of the leaves. There was also a shiny, sticky element all over the leaves and the floor around where the plant was. I believe the infestation is scales. I've never had them before, so not sure. I tediously scraped the little bugs off each leaf, front and back, and the stems with an index card. Is there anything else I can do to reduce the chance of reinfestation?
So getting that bay outside, you know, if it wasn't in soft growth, is actually a great time to do it because they scale, you know, insects in general, they don't want to be outside where there's lots of predators coming by to eat them. And so that number one should slow them down quite a bit. But they probably won't leave completely without a little more work. And really the horticultural oil, and this could also be any other oil like neem oil, applied to the plants, you know, usually several times, three times in a row, is usually adequate to sort of break the life cycle of the scale. This is an insect, and so that they don't, they're no longer on the plant. Now, I would probably go ahead and do it once, maybe twice right now, but I would put a note on the calendar that when you're ready to bring that plant back in the fall, to do it three times in a row, about 7 days apart again, and then when you come in, it should be clean.
All right, fair enough. Last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Bess. Bess says, I have a 3-inch mail order blueberry bush, self-pollinator, planted it in a big pot. How do I tend it and help it grow? And that's from Bess.
Well, when you get something that small, sometimes it's a mistake to put it in a pot that's too big because it may stay wet. You may want to plant it. You could even redo it. Put it in something smaller and let it grow and then transplant it as it goes up, because you just got to be real careful when you're watering something that small in a big pot.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just fertilizing and sunshine, right, Greg?
Yeah, that should do it.
All right, fair enough. Oh, okay, that's my cue. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Bob in Northfield. Bob, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
I have an eastern redbud tree I planted 3 years ago. I got it from a nursery. It flowered very minimally the first year. And early spring, I stopped back in the nursery and asked the grower there why it wasn't flowering. It would leaf out in the summertime, but not flower in the spring. And he said to me I should be feeding it with superphosphate. And so he sold me some of this stuff, told me to put a third of a pound on at the drip line early last spring, another third of the pound, third of a pound in the fall, and another third of a pound this spring, very early spring. So I've done all that. Last year, it really leafed out big time, and it did grow some. But again, this spring, there's no flowers. Any idea?
Okay. Then, what county are you in?
Franklin County.
Franklin County in Mass.
Franklin County. Yep.
Mass.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Which is so, a little warmer than us.
So you're okay, warmth-wise, you think, Greg, with that? I was worried that he was further too far north.
Yeah, no. It depends. I mean, there's some elevation there, but
I see other trees in my area that are flowering. There are trees in Montague that flower big time. You know?
And so when you look at the tree today, is it pushing out some new growth? You see some activity, or is it still dormant?
It appears that it's got leaf buds coming out.
And so you're not seeing any little, because those flower buds are pretty cool, right? They pop right out of the woody stem, kind of like magic.
Right. That's why I bought the tree. They're really lovely when they flower.
And the amount of sun it's getting is reasonable to half a day or more?
More. 75% sun.
So what sometimes I find with flowering things, when they're first planted and they really start growing and you're fertilizing them well, they put out a lot of foliar growth and they don't flower. So one of the things we recommend sometimes is to root prune it. Take a shovel and not dig around the plant, but just put the shovel in the ground and cut a few roots. And in some senses, sometimes that scares the plant a little bit, which means it wants to reproduce itself to preserve the species. And so you basically stress it just a little, and it says, oh, gee, I ought to flower, instead of putting out all this leaf growth. So sometimes that works.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Greg, you want to finish up?
No, it's been 3 seasons, and that means usually by the 3rd season we start to see them settle in. But, you know, it can take another one. So as long as it's leafing out and is in a good sunny spot, I do think it will come around and bloom for you. So that's all.
Let's go to Lenore in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts. Lenore.
Hi.
Hi.
I cut down a Niagara grape because it was so annoying, and it was not the fruit was terrible. It was just falling all over the place. It was on a deck. So I cut the thing down. I felt bad. And now it's only 6 inches tall, and it's coming back again. What should I do about it? I don't want it coming onto the deck, and I didn't dig the whole thing out. Is it possible to make it into an espalier?
Sure. Yeah. You mean you have all that new
what
growth coming? You could direct it in any way you want. That's a great idea.
Okay. Then I didn't know you were coming on the air today, and I already transplanted a bleeding heart. It just popped up. I'm in the same 5B area in Massachusetts as a previous caller. So the things came up from the ground, and I transplanted it. You think I ruined it for the season? I won't get any flowers?
I think you can do that. They're still just coming up, especially if you didn't take it apart too much. They're pretty tough, and the weather is nice and cool, so I think it's going to be fine.
All right, take it apart too much. I think I may have.
Uh-oh. Well, I really think you can be fairly aggressive with those plants even right now. Not an ideal time, but not the worst time. The worst time would be, 3 weeks from now.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Lenore. We appreciate it. Over to Rick in Albany. Rick, you're up.
Hey, Ray. Rick Orlando here. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Before I ask my question, I want to give a point to the guy with the cilantro and dill.
Oh, yeah.
Not the greatest gardener, but I do grow lots of herbs prolifically. And what I do with my cilantro and dill specifically is I divvy up my seeds and I plant pretty much in the same place every 2 weeks for like 4 to 6 weeks. And I have cilantro and dill pretty much all summer, and also the seeds are pretty delicious. So if you spread your plantings out, they'll just keep coming and coming, and you'll be fine. But also, guys are right, trim the top. What I wanted to ask you about is, with COVID and being home, I started quite a lot of vegetable plants, tomatoes, chilies, etc. inside. The thing is, I used my own compost, and I started to get a little funky, like a little bit of gray fungus on it. And I was reading online last night about a guy who says you mix hydrogen peroxide in water and spray it, and it's actually very good for the plants. It helps the roots get more oxygen. Have you heard anything about that ever, or know anything about it?
Well, there is a specific product that is a hydrogen peroxide-like hydrogen dioxide that's used as a fungicide to kill, specifically any mold spores and gray molds in particular. So yes, you could do that. It's about the dilution
mixed,
rate.
He said he mixed 10 to 1, and he said it actually helps the plants get more oxygen, because when the peroxide breaks down, it's actually creates
yeah, that
oxygen.
I don't.
I've never heard
that, but certainly may be true. Other things that you can use from pretty much that are in the kitchen there. Chamomile tea is a really good control, and baking soda and water as well.
What we would recommend too is don't use your own compost. Or less sterilize it. You never try to. If you're going to use soil for seed starting, you got to sterilize it.
All right.
Well, live and learn, babe. All right.
Hey, man. Hey, Rick, thanks. We'll talk to you soon. Over to Brian in Rensselaer. Brian.
Hi. I basically bought a house last year, and they used to have a pool in the backyard, and that took up most of the yard. But I think they used sand to basically level it. So it means I have very sandy soil, so my grass doesn't grow. I was curious if I could just spread topsoil around and try to get it going, or is there a certain depth that you need to have grass grow or anything like that?
When you're trying to grow grass, you can grow grass on anything if you fertilize it and water it enough, but it's really hard in sand. And, putting a quarter of an inch or a half an inch or an inch of topsoil is not going to do much. If you said to me, what should I do to really do a good job here? You should get rid of some of the sand and put deeper topsoil in, but that's kind of hard to do. Anything you can mix into it in the way of topsoil or organic material, but sand is sterile. There's nothing there. It doesn't hold moisture. It has no nutrient. So it's a little bit difficult, not impossible, but anything you can do to improve that soil will help you.
Yep.
So you would basically, I should take up, if I was going to take up and basically kind of start over, how far down do you need to go with fresh soil or mixture or something?
Two or three inches is nice. You don't have to do six, but an inch doesn't do a lot.
Four to six is kind of ideal, right? It'd be really good.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. Topsoil is expensive, though, right?
Yes, it is. Good topsoil is expensive.
What makes a good topsoil?
Well, it's usually a mixture of various things, not necessarily a lot of bark mulch. You know, it's clay and sand and compost and things of that sort.
All right, over to line 10 and Todd in Pownall, Vermont. Todd, you're on with Greg Ward on Bob Graves.
All right, how you doing, guys?
Good, how are you?
Very well.
Good. I got this marijuana plant. It's a lemon skunk, and I want to know how I can get the stem to be more girthy because it's. I'm trying to flower it. Just giving it 12 hours of light each day,
yeah.
And to make the branches more stout to hold the bud on it, you know.
Well, Greg, it's legal over by your way. What do you think?
Yeah. So there, you know, nutrients. You know, I assume you're growing it in a container. You probably have it inside. There are specific.
It's indoor.
Yeah, there are specific nutrients that this plant is going to be requiring, and potassium. Is that third kind of common element that's usually in fertilizers. So water soluble fertilizers that are leaning toward potassium would probably be the best solution to that.
The other thing you need to recognize with that is depending upon how much light you have, if you go to some place where they're producing that plant under lights, you walk in there and it's almost blinding. There's a tremendous intensity of light. So if it's not really, really bright, it's going to be weak no matter what you do.
Right. And right. Moving it outside in about a month,
yep.
I really wouldn't rush it. I would wait until we're into the low temperatures of 55, 60 and highs above that. Moving that outside could certainly benefit. That plant would certainly benefit from that.
Is it even legal over in Vermont?
I don't know.
Greg, do you have people coming in Ward's Nursery saying, hey, dude, I got to work on my plants a little bit?
Pretty much exactly that, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what do you do? I mean, this is a new paradigm, right?
There are, and off the top of my head, I don't have the specific names, but there are several products, both soil products and nutrient sources that have been developed by companies for that. So we offer several choices. It's a pretty straightforward. There's a little procedure, a little recipe of what you would follow over the course of weeks and months.
Yeah.
And you can be pretty successful. So I think he's going to do well. He just, it's going to be July, August before he's harvesting. So you got plenty of time.
Yeah. Are people more mellow when they walk in the shop now, Greg?
Yeah, especially in that aisle.
And they play more Quicksilver Messenger Service over the PA. That's great. All right, listen, we're done, gentlemen. This was fun. Bob Graves, who knows? You might be back next week. So anyway, thank you very much. Bob and Greg, thanks both for being here. Support comes from Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, and wine. Due to the COVID-19 response, they are offering family takeout options through May 18th. ChesterCommonTable.com. Had the Hyde Collection temporarily closed to support their community, providing online art with images and virtual exhibitions. HydeCollection.org for details. Once again, thanks to Bob Graves and Greg Ward for being here on The Gardening Show today. Thank you for calling. I apologize to the many left on the line. We'll get you next time. You never know. At this rate, there could be another one tomorrow. I'm not even sure. I'll find out in a moment. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Charlene Knight took the calls. Our producer, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk astronomy with Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.